And he goes, you know, you've been telling us for years this five pillow is just a platform for God, and you're going to come back someday and help us all out of this addiction in this world.
This is Family Policy Matters, a weekly radio show and podcast from NC Family, designed to better inform listeners about the critical issues of the day and encourage you to be voices of persuasion for family values in your communities. And now your host, NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. As our nation celebrates Independence Day, we are reminded that the American experiment is one of self-governance and self-responsibility. Our democratic republic operates properly when the citizenry is both engaged and morally sound. As President John Adams put it, we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Well, as I'm sure many of our listeners will recognize, the voice of today's guest who joins me will discuss not only his success as a businessman and entrepreneur, but also the difficult path he has trod and the struggles he has faced and overcome on his way to recognizing what many would characterize as the American dream. Mike Lindell is the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. You've probably seen or heard him encouraging consumers to buy his products on TV and radio. But even more compelling than his entrepreneurial success is his personal story of battling with and overcoming intense drug addiction, which has led to him to found the Lindell Recovery Network. And Mike has determined to use his success as a platform to talk about his faith and to encourage his fellow Americans to follow his example of fearless civic engagement. Mike Lindell, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
It's awesome to be here.
Well, great. Well, Mike, many of our listeners are probably familiar with your pillows and other bedding products, but they may not know about your personal story and journey. As we begin our conversation today, it'd be great if you could share briefly a little bit about that story.
Well, I was, I've always been an entrepreneur, and my parents divorced back when I was 7 years old, and I got put into a new school, and I actually had this I would either show off or I would be very shy. It almost affected me trying to fit in, this fear of rejection. I can look back now and see that. So you got up through my teen years and up into early adulthood, and it kept going that way. I would either do things to show off. My 5-year reunion, I was everyone else was finishing college and they were starting to raise families and had a new job. And I wasn't doing anything. And the 5-year reunion, I was just bragging about owing the mafia money for football bets or getting in a motorcycle accident, going skydiving and my parachute didn't open. All these things that happened, but in reality, and I just took over the room for attention, but in reality, I wanted what they all had. And that actually manifested into a cocaine addiction for about 20 years. And then it switched to crack cocaine in the early 2000s, right around the year 2000. You know, people say, well, when did you quit all that? Well, I invented my pillow in 2004. And by the grace of God, I quit everything in January 16, 2009. So there's a whole stretch there where all these things happened, including an intervention by drug dealers the year before I quit. And in 2007, I lost a 20-year marriage. I mean, we got the pillow company I was actually making pillows and labeling them in our living room. When I invented my pillow, I was turned down everywhere, and we ended up doing home shows and fairs. But people tried to take the company, and it got to be 2008, and it was the middle of the night, and I come out. I was up for 14 days, and the drug dealers, there's three of them, like, downtown Minneapolis. I walk up, I go, what are you guys doing? You know each other? And they knew of each other, but they had never met, and they did this. I said, what is this, an intervention? The guy says, yeah. He says, we're cutting you off. And he's telling the other two guys, none of your guys are selling Mike anything. He's been up for 14 days. And the one dealer left in disgust. The other one went down to the streets. It was actually his place. And the other guy had kicked him out. And he sat in the chair and he looked down. I had a couple crack cocaine rocks left. And he says, how much you got left? And I look, and he looked, and anyway, he ended up falling asleep, and I went down to the streets of Minneapolis. I could not buy any more crack anywhere. Everybody was turning me down. I got back upstairs, and here's what he said. He goes, I was all upset, and he goes, give me that phone. I'm going to take a picture of you. He says, you're going to need it for that book you've been telling us about. And he goes, you know, you've been telling us for years this Bipillow is just a platform for God, and you're going to come back someday and help us all out of this addiction in this world. And he said, we're not going to let you die on us. And I would always tell those guys that someday I was going to come back and quit everything and come back and help. So they, that, I just always remember that intervention. By the way, two of those guys work for me now, and born again Christians, and so it's a pretty amazing story.
But, wow, that is awesome. That is awesome. Oh, Mike, what was the turning point for you in your drug abuse and recovery? I'm certain that experience that you shared had something to do with it, but it had to be more that was kind of going on internally with you.
Right. Well, God was always chasing me my whole life. He was chasing me. I would get out of things, get out of these. I get myself in a thing. I say, you know, if God, if I get out of this, and, you know, maybe that would be the only time I'd pray and go, you know, God, get me out of this. I'll never do this again, or blah, blah, blah. And I would get in a scrap or whatever, and I would almost just assume I'm going to get through it. And in 2008, when those drug dealers did that intervention, there was a lot of things happened in 2008. And one of the things, my son stood in the driveway crying. It was like 18. He said, I can't stay here anymore. I thought I was hiding the addiction pretty good, but, you know, and not affecting. And that was one thing that hit me hard. But in December of that year, my friend came to me. This is very key. He came to me, and he was my equal. We had both started cocaine at the same time. We had both started turned to crack cocaine at the same time, and he had been clean for 3 years, and I hadn't seen him in 2 years, and I heard it that he had quit, and he came walking in the door, and I said, Dick, what are you doing? He said, the Lord led me here. What's going on? And I said, well, as long as you're here, I have some questions. And the first question I asked him is it boring? And he said, no, man, it ain't boring. But and he wasn't there long, maybe 15, 20 minutes, but he left with a concern. I had never seen him like that before, and it was also that I knew he had been set free of all this, of this addiction.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a radio show and podcast from NC Family. You can sign up to receive an updated podcast each week on iTunes or any podcast app. To listen to the show online, and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
I got to be to January 16, 2009, and at that point it was like old-fashioned TV where you turn it off and it goes down to this little tiny dot, and you turn it back on, the TV comes back to life. Well, I knew if we waited one more day, people say, was that your bottom? And I say, well, you know, I made sure I didn't have any money or anything left or of anything. But I knew that my calling would be gone. I was going to choose someone else. And I knew this inside of me. And I actually said a thing. I said, God, I want to wake up in the morning and never have the desire for these drugs or alcohol or anything again. And I'll do this, you know, this what I'm called to do, this platform. And I actually, I woke up in the morning and the desire was gone.
Now, wow, that's awesome.
Completely gone. And then things started happening. A week later, I had to borrow money from some guys. And I didn't know these guys from Adam. It's a funny story. I walk in there and I was afraid even to talk to anybody. But these guys had suits. That really, I didn't need the two forks. And I'm going, you know, I go, wow, these guys, you know, anybody with more than one fork and wore a suit, they scared me. So I walk in, there's a CFO, a CIEIO, all these C's, and I needed to borrow 30 grand cash with no collateral for these guys that were taking my company. I had to get my fabric back. And I walked in there and I told them this story. I said, I'll pay you back 40 grand for 30 grand. I'll pay you back within 2 months. I'm going to do home shows and fairs around the country. And I have a dream of an infomercial someday. And I used to be a crack cocaine addict, and I'm going on and on. The one guy goes, he goes, well, when did you quit crack? And I said, last Thursday.
Oh, wow. And they,
four of them got up and left the room like Shark Tank. And the other four said, they ended up giving me the money. They still don't know why they gave me the money. I do. It was a divine appointment. But now 2 months later, though, I felt led to go to my church, and had they had this outpatient treatment center that was faith-based, and I felt led to go there, and I walked in the door, and I told this counselor, you know, I used to be an addict 2 months ago. I said I felt led to come here and all this stuff. Well, I went in there on the first day, and I had been in treatment centers throughout the 80s for get my license back and stuff, but this one was different, and I was telling, I did all these drugs and everything, and they're going, we don't care how much you did. We want to know, what tell us about your father and your family.
Wow.
And I'm going, what does that have to do with anything? And they're going, well, my family divorced when I was 7, back when divorces weren't common. And I learned so much. Seeds were planted there of where addiction manifests from in that center. And then all these years later, and by the way, I hadn't done a full surrender to Jesus Christ yet. That comes way later. That comes February, ready for this? February 18th, 2017.
Wow.
So there's a big gap there. but there was a lot of seeds planted back then with addiction, and it was real important to me.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. Now, Mike, I know you're stepping up to the plate to help stem the tide of drug abuse in our country. Tell us about the mission of the Lindell Recovery Network.
Well, what I'm doing, and actually, it's going to be ready to launch in about a month. It'll coincide this fall, and my book's coming out from What Are the Odds from Crack Addict to CEO, that is going to get all the, you know, the proceeds from the book, and everything is going to finance this recovery network. But here's what it is. You're going to be an addict. I'm going to be like the tour guide of this website, and I'm going to go, I tell the addict, put in your age and your addiction, what you're addicted to. A 22-year-old opiate addict might not relate to a 50-year-old meth addict. So these stories that I have collected, tens of thousands, they're not stories about them. It's the commonality of the drug. Like for crack, and what you didn't like about the drug, like let's say it's for crack cocaine, I'll go, you know, I got tired of always peeking out windows, and it was so much work. I got tired of trying to find baking soda, because you need that to make crack. I got tired of going to grocery stores at 2 a.m. and buying a set of silverware just because I needed a spoon. Now, if a crack addict sees that story, he knows I've been where he's been. It's not a story of a bottom. So they know the commonality, but they see it in their faces going, wow, how did they get set free? Every one of them is set free. Well, all of these stories came from their alumni from the faith-based treatment centers in this country. Now I tell the addict, I'm the tour guide, and I say, hey, you guys, I have vetted over 3,500 centers now over the last year and a half. Every one of them works. And I tell the addict, you go in here, and I said, it's going to be like an apprenticeship on life. It's just me being my salesman to the addict, not the family. I'm not preying on the family. I'm going to the addict, hey, there's no money, it's free, there's no rule of 25, it's free, all these things. And I get them in there, and I say, you guys, when you get out, I'm going to be waiting for you. I'm going to have paid mentors set up all over the country, so when they get out, they have a mentor. And now they meet with them in live settings, and now if something goes wrong, let's say they have a relapse, it's a relapse match. Every addict that comes out of a center, even if they have Jesus as their foundation, they still have, there's triggers that happen. Let's say my kids still don't, they're still upset with me and they won't talk to me. Now, if that mentor didn't have that happen to them, they're going to punch into the app. They're going to go, my kids won't talk to me, and I can't deal with this. Now, mentors out there that are on call 24/7, just like my call center, that had that exact same thing happen to them and they made it through, they're going to get on the phone with him or get on that app, and there, it's so easy for that person to talk the guy through it because they've made it through.
Yeah, and
so they've been there. Let's say their spouse didn't wait for them. I went to treatment and they didn't wait, or I didn't get that job. And by the way, this is going to be one of the biggest employers in the country. It's going to employ tens of thousands of mentors. There's no better mentors and people to be counselors than people that have been through it and been saved.
This has been part one of a two-part series with MyPillow inventor and CEO Mike Lindell. Be sure to tune in next week to hear part two. To listen to the show online and for more resources on how you can be a voice of persuasion in your community and state, visit our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.